Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Power of Creative Destruction, Economic Upheaval and the Wealth of Nations by Philippe Aguillon, Céline Antonin, and Simone Bunnell. Translated by Jody Cohen-Tanuji. Narrated by Rich Miller. Publisher's Note: This audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit Tantor.com and type The Power of Creative Destruction into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page. Then, under the Supplemental Content section, please enter the access code POWER and then click the Unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. All figures and tables referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. Preface. We began writing this book in November of 2019. 4 months later, an unprecedented worldwide pandemic crisis struck. This crisis stimulated existential debate on how our society will look and how we want to reshape it when we emerge from the crisis. At the heart of the debate, we find creative destruction. Indeed, COVID-19 has destroyed jobs and pushed huge numbers of firms into bankruptcy. Yet at the same time, the crisis has created room for new, innovative activities. As Barry Eichengreen explained in a recent article in Prospect, May 26, 2020, with the evocative title Schumpeter's Virus, How Creative Destruction Could Save the Coronavirus Economy, the retail sector will utilize artificial intelligence and automation more than ever, because consumers will not give up the habit of ordering online that they acquired during social confinement. Similarly, confinement revealed the virtues of remote working and of video conferences. We also became acquainted with medical consultations by telephone or video. However, the realization that creative destruction can serve as a lever of growth after COVID presents a challenge to policymakers. On the one hand, they must protect, support viable firms in order to save jobs and preserve the human capital accumulated in those firms. On the other hand, they must reallocate, encourage the entry of new firms and new activities that are more efficient or more responsive to the new needs of consumers. In other words, they must accompany the process of creative destruction without obstructing it. More importantly, the COVID-19 crisis acted as a wake-up call by revealing deeper problems that plague capitalism in the different forms it takes throughout the world. Dysfunctional social welfare and healthcare systems in the United States, inadequate innovation systems in Europe, and the lack of transparency or the excessive centralization of power in yet other countries. More generally, in light of the rise of inequality, the concentration of rents, increasing job insecurity, and the deterioration of health and the environment that we have observed for decades, we hear more and more calls for radical change, even the overthrow of capitalism. However, in this book, we argue that the answer to our problems is not to abolish capitalism. It is to invent a better capitalism by harnessing the power of creative destruction, innovation that disrupts, but that over the past 200 years has also lifted societies to previously unimagined prosperity. The challenge we face is therefore to understand the underpinnings of creative destruction in order to steer its power in the direction we choose. How can we direct creative destruction toward greener and more equitable growth? How can we prevent yesterday's innovators from using their rents to block new innovation? How can we minimize the potentially negative effects of creative destruction on employment, health, and happiness? What are the forces, firms, governments, constitutions, civil society, that enable us to steer creative destruction in the direction we desire? These are the questions we will attempt to answer in the following chapters. The raw material of this book comes from 5 years of lectures at the Collège de France, which themselves encompass more than 30 years of research on the economics of innovation and growth. This material was enriched and reorganized around a central theme: the power of creative destruction, and how the transformation of capitalism can direct this power toward achieving more sustainable and inclusive prosperity. 1. A New Paradigm. This book is an invitation to a journey through economic history, more specifically, a journey to explore the enigmas of economic growth through the lens of creative destruction. Creative destruction is the process by which new innovations continually emerge and render existing technologies obsolete. New firms continually arrive to compete with existing firms, and new jobs and activities arise and replace existing jobs and activities. Creative destruction is the driving force of capitalism, ensuring its perpetual renewal and reproduction, but at the same time generating risks and upheaval that must be managed and regulated. Our purpose in this book is to 1. Penetrate some of the great historical enigmas associated with the process of world growth, such as industrial takeoff, major technological waves, secular stagnation, the evolution of inequality, convergence and divergence across countries, the middle income trap, and structural change. 2. Revisit the great debates over innovation and growth in developed nations. Can we foster innovation and creative destruction while at the same time protecting the environment and reducing inequality? Can we avoid creative destruction's potentially detrimental effects on employment, health, and well-being? Must we fear the digital and artificial intelligence revolutions? 3. Rethink the role of the state and civil society. What role can each of them play to stimulate innovation and creative destruction, and thereby increase the wealth of nations? How can we protect citizens and the economy from the excesses of capitalism? Even as he extolled the merits of creative destruction as the driving force of growth, Joseph Schumpeter was pessimistic about the future of capitalism. In particular, he anticipated that large conglomerates would push out small and medium-sized firms, leading inexorably to the disappearance of entrepreneurs and the triumph of bureaucracy and vested interests. The final chapters of this book, chapters 14, 15, and the conclusion, which deal with the state and regulating capitalism, conclude our journey on an optimistic note, but a fighting optimism, adopting Karl Marx's famous words. The philosophers have hitherto only interpreted the world in various ways. The point, however, is to change it. 1. Measuring the wealth of nations. The preferred measure of the wealth of nations is per capita gross domestic product, per capita GDP. Why should we focus on this dry statistic rather than on more literal measures, such as indexes of well-being, consumption, or happiness? One argument is that the material well-being of billions of human beings is closely linked to per capita GDP of the country where they live. For example, the industrial takeoff at the beginning of the 19th century corresponded to a takeoff of per capita GDP after a long period of stagnation. The growth of per capita GDP enabled a large part of the populations of developed nations to attain a standard of living that only a few privileged people enjoyed at the beginning of the 19th century. By contrast, inadequate growth of per capita GDP in poor nations means that hundreds of millions of people still live in extremely difficult and precarious conditions. Consequently, it is important to understand what governs the growth of per capita GDP in order to understand why some countries have prospered and others languished, and why wealth is so inequitably distributed across countries. In addition, per capita GDP has the advantage of enabling comparisons between nations not only at a given point in time, but also over time. This book focuses on the growth of utils, a measure of what is useful or procures well-being within a nation. Many of these utils are traded on the market for goods and services, and are therefore included in the calculation of GDP, but others are not. For example, GDP does not take into account the time saved by reserving train tickets over the internet rather than queuing at the train station or a travel agency. Similarly, the photos we take with our smartphones cost us nothing, and accordingly are not included in GDP. In the past, before digital cameras, we had to buy
Sample complete. Ready to continue?